This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
This is the Book Riot Podcast. It's a weekly news and talk show about what's new, cool, and worth talking about in the world of books and reading. Today is Thursday, September 14th, 2023. I'm Jeff O'Neill, here with Rebecca Shinsky, coming to you from BookRiot.com. I didn't put in the agenda because I wanted to surprise you a little bit, but a new reading device came into my life.
Oh, and do tell.
Over the last 12 days since we've last talked, do you want to guess how many books I've read in the last 12 days?
Oh, I have to guess how many books before I know what kind of device it is?
That's it is. I can't give you enough to make a good guess. It has to be embarrassing for you. Otherwise, it's not fun.
10 books in 12 days.
16 books.
Holy crap, Jeff O'Neill.
Well,
what is it, a time turner?
Includes a couple of audiobooks. So, okay. You know, my normal reading
16
stuff.
16 books. Damn.
I went on a real jag, Rebecca Shinsky.
That's a jag.
So, we'll do a sponsor break here in a minute and we'll come back and talk about it. So it's going to take up some of our front list foyer today. It's a front list device situation.
Love a new device.
Let's see. Other things. You and I are passing the baton back and forth. I don't think how relay works. I'm not the most outdoorsy kid. I don't think you just pass the baton back and forth. I'm not sure what that is. Is that conducting? I'm trying to think of other baton-oriented activities.
Oh, anyway, I'm just thinking of it as co-piloting.
Co-piloting, right, because that's how co-piloting works. You fly the plane for a week, and then I fly the plane for a week.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. We're passing the baton back and forth in the cockpit of a plane that is sure to crash. Anyway, we are writing ourselves Book Riot's Today in Books newsletter, where we do a little digest. We pick out some of the interesting stories of that day and say a little something about them. It's a superset of the things we actually end up talking about on the show, because today mm-hmm. we have, what, five things, and we won't get to any of them because I have to tell you about the scads of books that I read. But over the course of a week, we're linking to 20, 25 pieces. We get to have some personality. We link to some stuff. Go check it out, the Today in Books newsletter there, also first edition. I've got a couple of tidbits that I wanted to tell you, but I thought I would use it as a tease for first edition. The next episode, which I believe will come out either Friday or Monday. So by the time this episode is out, I interviewed a couple of women from Red Tower, who are the publishers of a book called Fourth Wing. Have you heard of it?
I am familiar, yes.
Which
Rebecca Yeros is having a year.
She's having a year. It is the top-selling hardcover fiction book of the week yet again. And I thought I smelled a story there. So Molly Majumdar mm-hmm. and Stacey Abrams from Red Tower, who are behind-the-scenes people, editorial director, and Stacey, I can't remember, operations. She's the one that was talking about when we ran out of the first print run, how I'm going to get boats from China come do it, and how many, their spredges situation.
Spredges.
They will not repeat the word spredges. They say the full non-contracted. They say sprayed edges or stenciled.
Jeff, someone has some dignity around here.
Already the taste was better than mine. A couple of nuggets from that one. So it's collaborative. So Rebecca Yaros, who's the author of The Fourth Wing, was writing contemporary romance. And the way Red Tower works, this is their first book, by the way, out of the gate for this new imprint at Entangled.
It's a hell of a start.
Hell of a thing. I said, you got to be careful. Don't plan on this every time. They laughed. Rebecca Yaros, to meet a deadline, I can't remember if it was for the sequel, Iron Flame, which comes out in November, or Fourth Wing here on the show. Rebecca Yaros moved in with their CEO to finish the manuscript for several weeks.
Oh, wow. That's real commitment.
And another thing, you're a former bookseller, and I think you taught me, what's the term of art for like the day? Is it street date, drop date?
Lay down date.
So and I didn't know this. I know it for some books that it's like totally embargoed where you can't get like the Bob Woodward book like at mm-hmm. all before. And so like publishers try to go buy them early and you're not supposed to be able to do this. I thought all books were like this. They were saying for Fourth Wing, it did not have a strict lay down date. So the booksellers could start selling it as soon as they got into the stores.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they were starting to see some social stuff and they were starting to see sales upticks. and moving a bunch of units before the technical sale date.
Love
so
that.
It was sold out by week two because they'd done a bunch of sales before, and I couldn't figure that out. I was like, well, this is already sold out. It's been 2 weeks. Well, then people have been buying it for 3 weeks before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes if anything that has a strict on sale date would come into the bookstore with like a stamp on the outside of the box that would be like strict on sale, do not release until September 15th.
Or, I need to. So if I went, will they put it out though? Or if I go poke around and say, hey, is the Jesmyn Ward in the back? Will they go pull up for me? Or would they actually be putting it in front?
I mean, I'm sure that the new Jesmyn Ward has a strict on sale date.
So, okay. It's only stuff I don't care about yet.
Yeah, it's like mid-list stuff. And I would guess that a lot of debut stuff that they don't anticipate is going to be big. Just have like typically the bookstores, at least Barnes and Noble at the time, which was more than a decade ago, Tuesday was the day that we were putting out new titles, but there are books that would show up from the distributor several days early. And if they got unpackaged and they weren't from a strict on sale date box, they might make their way out to the floor before that Tuesday. So you could theoretically pick it up before the date that's like listed on Amazon or Edelweiss as the on sale date. I don't know that Amazon like ships anything before it's listed on sale date. This might be one place that the bookstores have a slight, you just have to like luck into being in a store that has a mid-list book that you want.
Right, because Amazon, it's probably part of this platform, right? It has an on sale date. It'll flip over that pre-order button to you can actually buy and it'll get shipped to you tomorrow.
Anything that's getting big publicity or that is going to have like juicy nuggets in it that they don't want to have leaked beforehand, like the Bob Woodward book, any big political expose, anything like that, or like the Prince Harry book, that kind of stuff comes out with a strict on sale and usually has a media embargo associated with it where either nobody in the media even gets to see a copy in advance, or if you do on the rare instance get to see a copy, you have to like sign your life away that you won't talk about it publicly until the on sale date, or you won't publish a review or anything until the book is available.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, check that out. That's going to be available very soon. This is the kind of stuff I'd like to be
looking
doing more of.
That.
I find I learned a lot. I thought it was very fascinating, very smart people over there. Also coming up on first edition, probably in another week or so. So this is a real tease. I'm only excited about it because A, we're about to record it in like a half hour after we're done with this show. But you and Vanessa Diaz and I are going to be doing a special episode dedicated to the 25th anniversary of You've Got Mail, which is maybe we'll talk about in the show of where it stands in the pantheon of like book nerd movies, but it's way up there. It's in the conversation for the end cap of movies about that are related to books. So I'm really excited to do that. I rewatched it last night. Have a lot of thoughts and feelings.
Me too.
So check that out. But we're going to get a sponsor break and talk about some stuff that's going on in the world of books and reading.
Today's episode is brought to you by Flatiron Books, publisher of The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo. This is one I'm actually super excited about. I liked Leigh Bardugo's other adult fantasy books, and so I'm really looking forward to this one. It's set in the Spanish Golden Age during a time of high-stakes political intrigue and glittering wealth. It follows Luzia, a servant in the household of an impoverished Spanish nobleman who reveals a talent for little miracles. Her social climbing mistress demands Luzia use her gifts to win over Madrid's most powerful players, but what begins as simple amusement takes a dangerous turn. Luzia will need to use every bit of her wit and will to survive, even the help of Guillén Santángel, an immortal familiar whose own secrets could prove deadly for them both. So The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo is on sale now. And like I said, it's a must read of the season. It's perfect for anyone who loves history, a little bit of magic, a lot of danger. You can get your copy now at LeighBardugoTheFamiliar.com. And thanks again to Flatiron Books, publisher of The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo, for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Entangled Publishing's Red Tower Books, publisher of the smash hit Fourth Wing. You'll only cross these blades once in a page-turning new tale of revenge, strategy, and so many lies. Best-selling Red Tower Books is releasing its next irresistible read that will capture your imagination and keep you guessing until the end. Mae Corlin's Five Broken Blades tells an intricate, high-stakes tale of five total strangers united in a plot that will test their strength, wits, and courage. Each has their reasons, all have secrets. But while it's easy to betray a stranger, it's not so simple to stab a friend or a lover, in the back. Now these five blades must choose between vengeance and one another. Pick up 5 Broken Blades by Mae Corlin for a thrilling adventurous tale filled with risk, romance, adventure, and oh, so many lies. The relationships in it are complex and nuanced and involve everything from friends to enemies, found and biological family and lovers and more. Thanks again to Entangled Publishing's Red Tower Books, publishers of the smash hit Fourth Wing, for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Unchipped, the most epic dystopian science fiction adventure series that you've probably never heard of. And bonus points because it's Finnish. And when's the last time you read a Finnish dystopian science fiction novel? Right. Okay. So in this one, humanity is destroying itself as the cities burn, which sounds kind of familiar. It is the time of the great affliction. In this terrible world, a new hope arises. The Happiness Program, which is the creation of Finnish pharmaceutical genius Dr. Laura Solomon. With happiness, pills, mind mapping, and microchips, Dr. Solomon intends to build a new world for the worthy few. Which sounds like a perfect plan and nothing could go wrong, right? Right. So this is a raw but fun dystopian sci-fi adventure with an unusual premise describing what happens when technology rules humanity. Either you're chipped living inside the AR society or you're left outside to barely survive. Make sure to check out Unchipped by Taya DeVere. And thanks again to Unchipped, the most epic dystopian science fiction adventure series that you probably never heard of, for sponsoring this episode.
Do you want me to save my device experience for the end, or should we make that the meat of the show? Or do you think people are going to be like, if we talk about Drew Barrymore now, they're going to be like, God dang it, I want to hear about Jeff's new device.
I want to know what the new device is. You can't tease something that got you to read 16 books in 12 days and then make the people wait for an
hour. Okay, so the backstory here is there's a couple of things. Like any remarkable achievement, it's really the confluence of several wins, right? The first win was my darling Michelle had COVID, and so she was quarantining upstairs. So we weren't watching TV at night. I was in the basement, so I had some more time. I have made a concerted effort to do less internet that's not work related. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be on my phone at stuff that I don't want to be looking at, except that it's there, right? I don't want to be eating the Pringles of my digital time. Just eat it because it's there. And I am prone to this in all walks of life because I'm interested in things and like to eat things. And then the third thing that happened is my Kindle Oasis stopped taking a charge, which I've been reading for the last 4 years, I think. So, and I prefer when I'm e-reading to read on a Kindle, even though I have a phone and I have an iPad, but I don't like to read on them. So I was like, you know what? I've been meaning to check out a Kindle Scribe.
Okay.
Should I look at it? How much is it? And I had a deal, and I don't know if you ever get these deals through your credit card, like use one membership point and you get 30% off a purchase at Amazon.
Oh, stuff like that, yeah.
Yeah, and I had one of those. So I looked at the Scribe and it was like a few hundred bucks, but I could get 30% off if I used one Amex point or something like that. I'm like, I don't have much restraint, and that's all the slippage I needed. And so I bought myself a Kindle Scribe.
You do love a new device.
I do love a new device. And it's been almost a full season since I had something else to play with. Since we bought a projector that we set up in the great room for big movies. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. So I got a Kindle Scribe. And I've wanted a bigger e-reader for a long time. You and I have talked about this. I couldn't justify replacing my Oasis. And like my refrigerator, which I love to hate, I was waiting for my Kindle Oasis to die. But damn, Kindles can last a long time. So I didn't think this was happening anytime soon. And I've never had a Kindle stop taking a charge. Okay. I think the last one I had, my Paperwhite that I had before, it just stopped. I got the like red or like the X through the battery. It's like, I don't know what happened. It just failed. So I got a Kindle Scribe.
Here.
And
how big is it?
I don't know. People can Google that. But to me, in my hand, it feels like the size of the reading surface is about the size of a hardback page. So it's like trade paper. So it's a good size. And I'm a larger person. I've got a big hand. I could read this one-handed. I don't think most people can, frankly. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's the new device. I don't know if it's I'm sitting in the basement looking for stuff to read. I frankly don't know if sometimes you get on a jag and I read a bunch of stuff in a row that I was really into. But I don't think I've ever read this much for pleasure in a row ever. Maybe when I was in grad school preparing to my orals, but even then I wasn't getting through the number of titles. But I was reading a whole book in a day and then starting another one. Because that's what you have to do. And I really enjoy, like, it feels great. My Oasis, I always felt like I was turning the page. It's just like, it wasn't long enough to get on there. And then if I'm reading, my eyes are not getting as great. If I'm kicking the font size up, then I really feel like I'm, I don't know what I'm looking at, like flashcards or something like this.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe the bloom will come off the roses as want of roses to do, but I think it's my favorite digital reading experience, bar none. It feels to me categorically different somehow.
I think it's magical when you have like the Goldilocks moment with a device like that. And that's what it sounds like you're having here. I have the same thing with my iPad mini. Like the screen is the right size for me. I can read in a bunch of different apps on it. And it's about the size. The screens are about the size of a trade paperback. And I'm a much smaller person. I have much smaller hands, but I can comfortably hold it with one hand or like prop it up. It's not heavy. And it does make a difference. It's enjoyable to read on it. So I can spend more time reading on it, and I'm less likely to wander over to my phone or to whatever else is happening around me. That's wonderful.
Yeah. And I can read outside because Kindles are good. You know, e-ink is good for reading outside. The weather's been really pleasant here. So I've been carrying it around, and there's a pen that comes with it. I think I sprung for the premium pen for like $12 more. I haven't even taken out of the box. I don't know what I'm going to do with the pen. I don't care. It is the size of a book that I'm used to reading. And there was something about it. And I can't read like this forever. Some of the other things are going to happen. Like I'm going to get in a slump. I'll hit a roadblock where there's one that I started yesterday and I'm just not as excited to pick it up. And then Michelle's no longer COVIDing and I got stuff to do. So this was a weird time, but I've never had a reading jag like this at all.
That
I can remember.
That is a real jag. I can't wait to hear more about what you've been reading. Yeah, I've been on the opposite side of it. I left on the 3rd for a trip and I had read I'd read half of a book before I left. I had it on my iPad, but then it was a red eye flight over. I slept the whole time and it was a busy week and I read nothing. And then I slept on the flights coming back. So when we got home, like on the 11th, I read the last half of the book that I had started a week prior. So I've been in one of my slowest reading periods over the last 12 days.
Between the two of us, we average 8 titles read.
Week. You're bringing our average up and I appreciate that.
Well, and the other thing that's going on too, speaking of confluence, is the flood of titles has begun.
Yeah, this is a rough time to like go on vacation and have a slow reading period. I'm deep in our Zadie Smith homework for next week's bonus episode, and the new Lauren Groff is just like staring at me from my coffee table.
I pre-ordered the Lauren Groff like a good little munchkin, and my reward is it's not coming until tomorrow. So congratulations to me.
Oh, that's the worst. My pre-order showed up on the correct day.
Yeah, maybe for authors that's going to help more. I should have thought about this. Like Groff don't need my pre-orders. Let me just go walk down to Powell's and enjoy the moment and pick it up and go do the whole thing. Yeah, maybe for a debut author. Is Groff mid-list? I feel some slippage here. What do we call this kind of writer? I mean, temperamentally, if she didn't sell a bunch of copies, she'd be mid-list. I mean, I guess that's the distinction.
I think Matrix moved her up into like...
But she's not commercial fiction. She enters that very rarefied zone where you're a literary author that moves up units,
upmarket
literary. I don't think it's
upmarket.
It's more art than that. I mean, that's the difference. Upmarket tends to be more... it's not as challenging as Matrix is. It's just not. And the fraud is challenging, too, speaking of.
That's true, yeah.
That's not upmarket. Zadie Smith, that book is not upmarket. I will fight people.
No, Zadie Smith is definitely not upmarket.
It's not.
The Lauren Groff... Or at least Matrix and How I Expect Vaster
Fates and Furies
to feel,
maybe was a little
Fates
more
Fates and Furies was like the edge of that, I think. But you're right. Like it's more, she's just solidly lit fic. She just moves units. She's literary. Right. Just popular literary.
I feel like my understanding of mid-list versus middle-brow versus literary is worse than it was 5 years ago. I feel like I should be better at this, but maybe, I don't know. I've crossed through the barrier of like really having a good sense of the topography there. I don't know.
Well,
anyway,
I think it's also
matter.
One of those things where like the closer you look and the harder you stare at all of these categories, the more clear it becomes that most of them are meaningless.
Yeah. So. Like I took a couple of editables and just started saying mid-list for a half hour and it's lost all meaning.
Mid-list. Middle-brow. Yeah. I think Zadie and Lauren are both in the high brow. If you have to assign a brow, they're on the higher side of the brow, but they're popular as well. Certainly Lauren Groff is. I'm going to be really interested in how the new Zadie Smith sells.
Speaking of highbrow, the Pulitzer Prize, well, they can straddle. They will tap in upmarket from time to time. But I was so thrilled. I think my favorite piece to link to while you were gone and today in books was the news that the Pulitzer Board is amending the citizenship requirement books, drama, and music. You may remember us talking about this. Yes. Javier Zamora wrote a really eloquent piece. And I think it was a part of several pieces written about this. I don't know if it was coordinated or some people were like, I'm not sure, but that's the piece we talked about. That's the first one I saw. A high-profile writer, Solito, was one of my, probably my favorite nonfiction read of last year. It's very difficult, but very moving and beautiful. The audiobook recommendation is Chef's Kiss. Well, the recommendation is not Chef's Kiss. That's patting myself on the back, which I will do, but that's not what I meant to do right there.
I do give a chef's kiss for that recommendation.
Yes.
It was good.
The current U.S. citizenship requirement to include permanent residents of the United States and those who have made the United States their home, their longtime primary home. So they have to create a definition, right? Because they're this is an extra legal definition. They're trying to capture people who are living and working in the United States as a long time. So I guess they're trying to get around people who are on like a residency or something. I don't know what the parameters are on long-time primary home is. I think that's probably something that's fluid in a case-by-case basis. Maybe, I don't know. But it is reacting to the reality is those people who should be eligible for Pulitzer weren't. And I think more people of those are today than they were a week ago.
It's wonderful news. And it goes into effect for the 2025 award cycle, which opens next spring in 2024. So this next Pulitzer that will be awarded in the spring of 2024 will be the last one that's awarded with the tighter restrictions, which is great. And I'm sure that's because they're already deep in the evaluation stage for that prize that'll be given next year.
One wrinkle I thought was interesting, and I don't think this got covered, or at least I didn't see it covered, is that already there was an exception in the history category because it allowed books on United States history by authors of any nationality.
Oh, interesting.
Which is pretty interesting.
That's fascinating. Yeah.
So, I mean, the idea here is that it's about by and about America all the way around. And that includes people that were excluded before. Makes a ton of sense to me.
It does.
I'm a maximalist when it comes to eligibility. There's very few. When it came to the National Book Award, remember they were worried about including the whole Commonwealth and as Americans.
Like, right.
Fine. I don't care.
Right. Like the reality is that most people are not going to win this thing anyway. Like your chances of winning it are low today and they're low tomorrow when eligibility increases. And casting a wide and inclusive net, I think, is the best for all of us.
I think this does mean that when the worst thing about something gets knocked off the board, something rises to take the crown. And so now the thing they need to get a handle on is the eligibility time period, because we need all of these to be January 1st to December 31st. I can't handle
published,
this, Rebecca.
They need to be published in a calendar year in order to receive the award in the following calendar year.
Because the amended criteria will go into effect beginning with the 2025 award cycle, which opens in the spring of 2024 and closes in 2027, and it can be retroactive to 1789.
It does make my head
nuts.
Spin.
I cannot handle this.
We've been doing this for so long, and literally every year I have to Google, like, when is the National Book Award? When is the Pulitzer? When is the Nobel? Because
they're all differently eligible.
Right. And when are the Oscars? Because some of those are adaptations, and we're thinking about that too.
Yeah.
And it's just, no.
I mean, the Oscars is the one that gets it right. If it's January 1st to December 31st, if it's released, and again, it has to be released in so many theaters and blah, blah, blah. But I at least understand that. But like, some of these awards, like, if your book comes out December 15th, you're not eligible to 19 months later.
Get me started about like the Emmy eligibility dates. I'm just glad we don't have that in publishing. Yeah, I don't think that any of the book awards have such weird eligibility dates that people are choosing the publication date based on like trying to slip something in for eligibility in a certain year. Like that amount of strategery around we want to compete against these titles instead of these other titles is just bananas.
It's very strange. So that's great to see. We'll put a link in the show notes, bookriot.com/listen. Yeah. You can see that.
Good
also,
job, Pulitzer.
Another round of authors suing OpenAI. I have nothing interesting to say about this, but the chorus is only adding tenors and baritones and sopranos here. It's not getting any smaller. Keep that here. I think the book story of the week last week was it's an awards day, weirdly.
It really is.
Drew Barrymore has decided to bring her talk show back, even though it is a WGA covered show. She has WGA writers. How, pray tell, are you thinking? Does this affect anything that Jeff and Rebecca would be talking about? And it's circuitous, but well, I guess it's one skip and a jump to, turns out the presenter of the National Book Awards here in November was going to be one Drew Barrymore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. I guess I don't know why Drew, I mean, sure, whatever.
Yeah, usually they try to have a celebrity, but often it's like someone that we know is bookish in some way.
And maybe she's had authors on her talk show, and maybe this is something she wants to do. Maybe she's a great reader. I have no sense of it myself. I don't, she has, Drew Barrymore hasn't had any mental mindshare for me since The Wedding Singer. So that's been, what, 20, 25 years at this point. And as you may guess, the kind of people who care about the National Book Awards are like, that's not cool to have a strike-breaking person preside over. Listen, it's not a stiff competition, but for the most glamorous nights in books, this is it.
Yep.
It just is the highest profile night in books. And none other than Colson Whitehead, who is loath to throw his hat into the ring about most sort of Twitter
things. Yeah, he does not get into it.
Came off the top rope with a tweet. I think this is the first one that I saw highlighting. Is like, wait a minute, Drew Barrymore also is hosting the National Book Awards. I don't know if Whitehead has already rented a tuxedo thinking he might be there for Crook Manifesto, but probably Julie Bearer always has hats in the ring. That's his spouse. So they're a literary power couple. They pay attention to these kinds of things. And it took, what, 24 hours for the National Book Awards to say, sit down, Drew?
Oops.
Yeah. So we don't have a list yet. Did you read Today in Books? I don't know how much you looked at what I did. Did you see what I'm trying to say here? Did you see what my two thoughts were?
Oh, I did go back and I scanned just to see which things you had linked to, so I didn't double link when I picked back up today. But I did not see who your two picks are. I'm curious.
My two thoughts were this. I think I'm all for let's get someone famous-ish here, but also I would prefer a little stronger tie to bookishness, at least one that I can parse with my human eyes who does this for a living. I don't think that's too much to ask. So I had two thoughts. One is, you know who's good at hosting things? Hosts. And Seth Meyers has shown a real commitment to having authors on that no one cares about outside of people like you and I.
Mm-hmm.
Like he'll have mid-list authors on there because he wants authors on there. He likes, and he's a nerd and he seems like a genuinely nice guy. He's been very supportive of the WGA strike. Right. So that seems like a home run. The other one, if you want to get a little more, wild is not, but a little looser, I'm sure it'd be a different show. Leslie Jones has a memoir coming out this fall.
Oh, interesting.
And also an SNL product. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be amazing. I don't know what Leslie Jones would do. I cannot say the title of her memoir because Apple would slap us with a NSFW tag, but go do yourself a favor and Google. I think that'd be a lot of fun. And then, I was like, why not Por qué no las dos? Meyer and Leslie Jones do a polar fey thing together. So what do you think of those?
I like that. I think that's a fun combination.
So there you go. Those are my picks.
Yeah. I think that's fun. I'm surprised they haven't gone for like Jenna Bush Hager, like big celebrity book club visibility.
Yeah. What Oprah, I mean, I think, I don't know if I wrote Jenna into the Oprah Reese thing as an obvious go-to.
Yeah,
maybe they already do that. I mean, they already do so much.
Maybe.
What's the marginal value of having them do it again in this situation? Don't know. Thinking about SJP, she's in the middle of whatever the name of this Sex and the City thing is, just like this. Yep. We've just died. We just got up. We just got up. I think that's what it's called.
That's definitely what it's called.
I just got up. I'm so tired. Time for bed? Is it called time for bed? See you in the morning. I don't know what it's called. But the Sex and the City whatever
she
product
would be
that
great.
Is.
What about like Steve Martin? Great reader. Tom
I thought
Hanks.
About Steve Martin. He has a novel out. Yeah.
Steve Martin's got a couple memoirs out. He did
well,
an
and he's
audio
got a little,
memoir
he's got a little
Q
rating with murders,
Gopnik.
With all the murders going on.
Yeah, right, right.
How about Marty Short, Steve Martin, and Selena Gomez?
And Selena Gomez, right, all together. Yes.
Yeah.
That would be fantastic.
I wonder what the last book Selena Gomez. Don't underestimate anybody, but.
No.
Those people are smart, man.
I think
I know
she's,
it's easy to say Disney kids
an
and whatever.
Reader.
I think she's an interesting reader. Plugged in. So anyway, the National Book Awards, that's a PR mess that you don't want to wake up to as someone who thought I had this all locked down. They're probably very much in the getting the napkins folded part of that award plan. The finalists are just coming out, like the translated award finalists just came out yesterday, and now you got to do a new host. So I'm sure they'll do something responsible. It would be anyone who wanted to cape in would get a huge boost. And I don't know who would be especially interested in doing that right now, but it would be interesting to see.
I'll be very interested. Maybe by this time next week, we'll know who's going to step in.
I wondered, they decided to move quickly and say, even though we don't have someone to fill the chair's void, which I thought was smart.
Well, yeah. And like Kerry Washington had a memoir out this year. She would be really interesting.
Barbara.
Brittany. Or Viola Davis from last year. Davis. Britney Spears hosting the National Book Awards would be like, I would be begging for a way to attend that ceremony.
I think Britney is holding it together with two hands. So I'm pulling for Britney. I'm not sure she's got a hosting a literary award ceremony. I don't think she has that in reserve right now. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. She's busy. She's plenty busy.
Yeah. Polar and Faye have both written books. Just bring one back. Maybe too small time for them. I mean, they've hosted the Oscars. This is not that. I mean, that's why I think you have a little bit of trouble. Like, you can't...
I was thinking, like, can we get Greta Gerwig and Adam Driver to host the National Book Awards? Are any of the Kens from the Barbie movie available? Simu Liu hosting the National Book Awards would be great.
It's interesting. It's very interesting. Anyway, let's take a sponsor break and do Frontlist Foyer.
Today's episode is brought to you by Bloom Books. Taming Seven is an epic and unforgettable love story in the international best-selling and TikTok phenomenon, The Boys of Tommen series from Chloe Walsh. So Tommen's cheekiest lad, Jared Gibbsy Gibson, has always been a comedian, but inside he is haunted by events of the past and he uses humor to cope, hiding his true self from the world. Then you have Claire Biggs, who is the epitome of sunshine. She's always loved Gibbsy, her brother's friend and her favorite neighbor. She also has always seen a side to him that no one else seems to notice, and she becomes determined to tame her wild-at-heart childhood best friend. So the Boys of Tommen series is an internationally best-selling YA romance series that has taken TikTok by storm. It's perfect for readers looking for new adult / crossover romance, dual point of views, friends to lovers, marathon-worthy TikTok books, and angsty tearjerkers. Taming Seven is published today, and it's the fifth book in the series, so make sure to check it out. And thanks again to Bloom Books for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Amazon Publishing. So I got a story with a little Old West debauchery, if you want to get a little messy. So there is a city steeped in the Old West mess. And in the city, a reporter is following every lead to a dangerous place, one that could bring him glory and fame or end his life. New York Times bestselling author Robert Dugoni is back with a gripping new thriller of corruption, vice, and murder set in Depression-era Seattle. It's about a reporter covering a hot murder trial who soon learns nothing is what it seems. The story could make his career if he lives to write about it. You can learn more at amazon.com/A Killing on the Hill. So yes, A Killing on the Hill by Robert Dugoni is what you need to pick up if you are into some Depression era danger in Seattle. It's a city of big dreams and dark ambitions, and this reporter gets caught up in the muck. So make sure to check it out, and thanks again to Amazon Publishing for sponsoring this episode.
All right. I need to get out my phone book of recent reading here. So let me take a second. What were you reading on the plane? Did you tell me?
Yeah, I didn't tell you. I read How to Say Babylon by Sophia Sinclair. It's coming out next month.
And?
It's effing great.
The buzz is insane.
It's great. It's so good. And I made it like 20 pages in before I was just like, oh man, I'm so jealous that Jeff is going to listen to this on audio.
It's on audio.
But I'm so slow on audio. Yeah. And I wanted to get to it before I got like into this whole, the loop with Zadie and Lauren and everybody for the next couple of weeks. It's really good. Like Poets by Memoirs, man. Memoirs by Poets. That's the way that goes. It's really good. The language is gorgeous. I think the educated comparison is relatively appropriate.
Yeah.
Her father like gets deep into Rastafarian culture, like religion adjacent stuff becomes very authoritarian. And she discovers reading and writing poetry as her way out, first emotionally and then literally her way out of that house and out of Jamaica. So it's harrowing, like lots of trigger warnings for all the things, but it is very good. It's going to be great in her voice in audio. I'm glad that you're going to get to have that experience. It's wonderful.
Yeah. Okay. What am I going to do here? I can't talk about all of them. I don't want to talk about all of them. How about biggest positive surprise?
Okay.
Disappointment. Mm-hmm. And I've got two candidates for it turns out good things are good.
Okay. Let's do it.
Let's do biggest surprise on the upside. Anyway, exceeded expectations. I don't know if this is the one, but this one exceeded expectations. I don't know really why I got into it. I think Lib, when I was guesting on new books, we were doing a little after show and I asked her, what's her favorite 2023 read so far? And of course she reads way ahead. And I don't know if this is still true and I could be misremembering this. So this may have made nothing to do with reality at all, but she mentioned this title, Happiness Falls by Angie Kim, which is a mystery kind of thriller. It's set during COVID, but it's not about COVID. It's something they deal with over the course of the book. It's an Asian American family, and they are sheltering together. They've come back to the house because they're COVIDing, and the father goes missing one day while he's out on a run with the son of the family, who has a condition called Angelman, which is a condition that has all kinds of ramifications to it. I don't want to get into it too much because I don't have the specific language in front of me. And also it becomes part of the plot. And so it's this family looking for the dad and trying to piece together what happened when the primary witness or expert in what happened has a hard time communicating as you and I would communicate about something like this happening. And it was probably messier by about 17% than it needed to be. It could have been tightened up. It could have been 75 to 100 pages shorter, and there's backstories and flashbacks and side notes. That it's a sophomore novel, and when I got into it, I didn't care because it was super compelling. The characters were really interesting. The voice was really good. I had no idea how it was going to resolve itself. I didn't even know how it was going to even what the process was going to be to resolve itself at the end. It's got some interesting things about representation, about neurodivergence, which is both, I think, handled well and differently. And is it exploitive? I don't believe. I looked a little bit. It doesn't like people are having issues with it, like some people had with The Maid by Anita Prowse. I thought it was wonderful. It's on the long side, but I ripped through it. It was really good. And I think for people who like a upmarket literary mystery thriller kind of situation, this is right up the alley. I would really recommend it. I don't think there's really, outside of like if someone goes missing, the things that could happen, those are all discussed. So if that's a trigger warning for you, you probably shouldn't be reading missing persons books, but also I guess if you find some, you do, just to know about that. So that was a real surprise to me on the upside. I just didn't know what I was walking into there. Let's do with Jeff, You're Dumb, because of course it's good. I loved Tom Lake by Ann Patchett.
Yes!
I loved it.
Wasn't it funny?
It was so fun and great and warm and just enough lemon juice at the end that it wasn't oversweet. It was great. I don't know what to say.
It is great. It's a good one.
It's a really good one. I found myself really wanting an adaptation suddenly because there's a lot of good set piece stuff.
Yes.
I have a soft spot for Our Town. I just am. I'm
and
a basic
do
bro,
the
fun I guess.
Casting with the older generation and then the younger versions of those characters.
I thought it was, I really loved it. I really got into
it.
It's
one of my favorite
myself.
Ann Patchett's for sure. It was so, and I just thought the voice was a little more biting than she usually is. It's sharper, funnier.
It's been a while since I was Ann Patchett. I would maybe do one more notch up if I could of edge. I take a little more of an edge.
Sure. Yes.
But
this to me felt like discovering that Ann Patchett had edge and I wanted more of it once. It was like, oh, you have that in there? Okay, girl.
Yeah. It was, I thought it was really good. I really enjoyed myself.
I'm delighted.
So, which is good to say. I guess another one, I've been meaning to read Tana French for a million years because I know people love her. This is really more towards the genre reader, but I know it's in the Jane Harper mode where maybe it's an elevated, more literary style. There was $1.99 for The Searcher on our own Book Riot deals, and I'm in the middle of a complete jag and I'm looking for anything.
Perfect.
And it's a standalone, right? It's not part of her canonical Dublin murder squad. It's a standalone set in Ireland, which is not Scotland, but it's not that different than Scotland. I was just there. Rebecca, I read it in a day, and it's big. It was like a Saturday. It was great. It was really good.
I read the first couple in the Dublin Murder Squad, and I remember just zooming through both of those. I've lost track of her, but it's good to hear this about the
standalones. This one is really good. It's the most recent one, I think, 2020. The plot is there's a retired Chicago police officer that moves to a small town in Ireland for his retirement, just get it away from it all. But something happens, and he can't. It's weird. A retired detective with a heart of gold, they really should use this more often in mysteries and thrillers. I think there's something there.
It's a novel concept.
Is it possible that Town of French didn't include one detail about Chicago? And as you who spent some time in Chicago, could it have been he's from St. Louis or Houston or Kansas City? He's an American. And even that, I'm not so sure it mattered.
Does he even get on the L?
Well, we do a little bit of backstory, but we don't spend a lot of time in Chicago, except that probably she's seen enough Law and Order to know how the American jurisprudence system works. Did I care? No. Did I notice it? Maybe. But he gets involved in this small town and something happens. And the characterization of the secondary characters is what you're there for.
Oh, that's fun.
He goes to interview this person or this person. He's trying to figure out a way to investigate a missing person's case without having all the tools at his disposal, but also not knowing literally and figuratively the lay of the land. Mm-hmm. And that was great. It was wonderful. I immediately texted my brother, who really likes a page-turnery mystery to unwind from work, but he doesn't want genre. He doesn't want the hardcore stuff. I think this one is going to... I'm going to be recommending this to people on moms, dads, and grads and whatever from here.
Sounds
like
a good Swiss Army option.
Yeah, I think it really is. So that... And then I'm on such a jag. Let me scoop up while I'm on a heater some stuff I probably will never read, but I want to have in my belt, if you hear what I'm saying. I want to know what this book is. So I picked up The Midnight Library by Matt Haig.
Oh, yeah. I've never got to that one.
I don't get it, man.
Tell me more about that.
It's not evil. It's not irresponsible. It's not anything like that. But for this to be one of the early and ongoing TikTok book talk sensations, I don't see it. I wouldn't have picked it out of a lineup to be something that people latched onto. And I think maybe I should just know that I'm not going to be good at this, which is bodes ill for my chosen profession, maybe in a certain way. The setup here is this is a young woman who hasn't had it very easy, and she's depressed. Spoilers, I guess, and trigger warnings too for self-harm here. So skip ahead a few minutes if that bothers you. And she ends her life and wakes up, or her consciousness appears in this, I don't know, whatever world, in between space.
Okay.
And there's a librarian there, and there's a bunch of books. And each of the books on this infinite library shelf represents a possible life she could have lived if she had made a slight difference. And the book then follows her picking these different things. And as soon as the mechanism, as soon as she starts to feel disappointed in that life, it pulls her back into the library, the Midnight Library. The mechanics of which, don't worry about it, because clearly it doesn't hold together. Until she finds one, a life that she could have lived.
So the goal is to not be disappointed?
To be one that, where one, she could be happy, right? Okay. Happy enough to live in it.
Okay.
And you can hear in my voice, it just didn't hold together for me. And it was about suicide and not about suicide. It's about, I felt like it just, there is an element of it that felt like live, laugh, love. To me, if you hear what I'm saying. You and I have an ongoing joke about live, laugh, love. There is a superficial wanting to live life out loud or wild and precious life stuff, but also sanding off the edges of lived experience, I think.
Yeah.
And there's something about this I didn't buy at all. It didn't feel like it was honest about the kind of depression someone actually had. And I know Matt Haig has talked about mental illness, so it's not like he's just, I don't know, piggybacking off trauma, exploitation. It doesn't, and people, it resonates with people. And I don't know what the mental health community feels about this. I have no idea. But I was shocked about how anodyne and gormless it felt. So that was a surprise. And I know. I guess, and I've always wondered, I was like, maybe I should, maybe this is like the night circus where it's very recommendable and maybe it's not for everyone all the time, but it serves a, I will never recommend this. I can't imagine who I'd recommend this to. So I don't know. That was a real surprise.
It does sound consistent with the same kinds of reasons that we were like very baffled by.
I thought about
it
this.
Ends with us taking off. Like there might just be a like shared flavor set for TikTok sensations, and it's definitely not our shared flavor set.
Which is fine. I mean, if people love it, that's great. Right. But as I was shocked.
Yeah, it's just those are. I think I'm coming to expect that a TikTok sensation is not going to be a book that's going to resonate with me in the way that it resonates for the folks that are touting it over there. That's really interesting.
And the last one, we got to go. We're running late. But the last one also that I devoured in one day, and I've been saving it, but I wanted to get it under my belt before the adaptation came out, which is coming soon, which is Leave the World Behind by Rahman Alam, which was tremendous.
Yeah, that's a heater.
that is a tremendous.
I also read that in one day. What, like the summer that it came out, where I was like, this is the thing I'm doing today. I am just not getting off this couch.
And it's
that's
rare.
A great one.
It's rare, and it's rare that I see what like the average Goodreads or whatever star rating is, and almost feel compelled to write a review saying you all have it wrong. Because I think it has like a 3.2, which is actually outside our normal like this is spec.
Those people are wrong.
I think it's the ending. People are wanting again. Read some lit fic, people. This is a lit fic book. This is not this is not Walking
An
Dead.
An ambiguous ending does drive people up the wall.
It drives people up the wall. I thought it was tremendous.
It's great. It's so good. I'm so glad you finally got there. I would not have ever guessed you were going to pick that one up. That's really great. I have one quick one to
end. Yes, go.
I am listening to, I know I said that I'm notoriously slow on audiobook, but I am finding every spare opportunity to like get in a couple of minutes. Exit Interview by Christy Coulter. It's a memoir of spending 12 years working in corporate Amazon. She started in 2006. She was there until 2018. That is six times as long as the average Amazon employee makes it. And it is a bananas. My biggest question is, how did you get around your NDA? Like, how could you write this book?
Maybe she started before there was an NDA. Maybe they forgot to paper her because they were moving fast and breaking things.
Maybe they did. Like, I've known folks that work at Amazon. The kinds of stories that she tells are pretty similar to the kinds of things that I've heard from people who have been there more recently. She uses phrases like high-grade lunacy. And the thing you have to understand is that no one here knows what's going on. That like the culture is just bananas in a lot of ways, but it's also like it's sharp and it's funny. It's very feminist. She's a woman in Amazon at a time when Amazon did not employ very many women, and I'm really enjoying it. I heard her on Kara Swisher's podcast a couple days ago and was like, oh, I'm definitely going to listen to this entire thing. I'm just mainlining it. It's great.
I didn't include, this is now we're getting a little bleed, first edition talk, the Kara Swisher, what triggered it. The IT book of the nonfiction IT book of the week last week was the Elon Musk book by Isaacson for a lot of reasons. There's a lot of here are the nine takeaways, but I knew that it was the IT nonfiction book of the week when I saw that Gary Steingart was commissioned by The Guardian to review it. Do yourself a favor.
I have bookmarked that for the weekend.
And go get it, sharpen your fork, put on your lobster bib, because the hot satirical butter is going to roll down your chin.
What a perfect choice. Like, kudos to that editor.
Yeah.
I would be happy to listen to Kara Swisher just talk about Elon Musk for 19 hours. Yeah. I'm not going to read the biography, but I'm so looking forward to that Steingart review.
Yeah, the Steingart review. There's a, I think it sounds like he sunk his teeth in and then savored the task at hand. So kudos to the commissioning editor at The Guardian.
Yeah, that's a great job.
For making that condition. Because Super Sad Love, True Love Story came out, God, a long time ago. It was one of the early arcs that I got.
Yeah.
And that book, I wonder when the 10-year anniversary, that might be an interesting reread, reconsideration, have Steingart come on. It's like, what we got right? Is it worse or better than you thought? I think it's probably worse.
It came out in 2010. So we could slide a little.
Missed it by 3 years.
Slide a little 15-year review in a couple
of years. Well, if I use National Book Awards eligibility, it's not yet eligible for the National Book Award. I just looked it up. It's not actually in the window. So let's wait a little bit.
Yeah, and his more recent novel, his COVID novel from last year, was also really fun.
Yeah, The Country People.
Country People, something like that.
Yeah, I almost consider that during my JAG here. And maybe if it continues, I'll get back to it. What's next on my scribe? I bought
Tell
it.
Me.
So one of my hints too, for if you want to go on a reading JAG, I don't know if people know this, is to have your next one queued up so that you just go right into it. Again, if you're normal, don't do this, but you know, this is behind the scenes. Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes.
I will look forward to your take.
Yeah.
The trailer for the movie looks awful. I'm not going to join you. I'm not doing that project.
Right. Yeah. Okay. If you had to pick one of well, I don't know if you know that Wonka is an adaptation, but if you had to watch Songbirds and Snakes or Wonka, what are you picking right now? Is Chalamet enough?
Do I get to like alter my consciousness before I do this?
You're going in sober. Like a dry piece of sidewalk.
I think Wonka is probably more entertaining if I got to go in straight up. So I would go with Wonka. I think I would have more fun commentating on Wonka than I would have watching Songbirds and Snakes. If what's happened in my house when the trailer plays is any indication. Bob's face when I was like, that is Hugh Grant. That is Hugh Grant playing an Oompa Loompa. One of the most satisfying moments I've had.
I think you're right. I think there's a chance for Wonka, if it gets real bad, you could blow past it into like Mystery Science Theater 3000 territory.
Yeah. Mm-hmm,
I think that would be harder with the grim, dark, child murdering element.
Right. Songbirds and Snakes looks like it's taking itself very seriously.
Yeah, that's right.
And yeah, okay. Well, good luck to you.
Yeah, we'll see. And I'll report back in a week to see if the boys cooled down. I mean, I have to. There has to be some regression to the mean. But it's been quite an experience. Rebecca, thank you as always. Show notes, bookriot.com. Listen, you can choose an email, podcast@bookriot.com. Let's see. We got all kinds of other stuff to shelve. Today in Books, first edition, Book Riot Podcast Patreon. We're going to record an Ask Me Anything episode tomorrow. We've got some good questions, some of our reading habits and other things to do there. I'm looking forward to that. So you can find us all kinds of other places. Thank you all so much for listening. Really appreciate that you stick with us through hearing about us talk about the ins and outs of the National Book Awards eligibility criteria. You do what you got to do. Rebecca, we'll talk to you soon.
Have a good one.